Here's our friend Bob Costas joining us right now. And one of the stories in Chicago today in sports is the is now the release of John McDonough, the president and CEO of the Chicago Blackhawks. But before John McDonough was in hockey, which when he got hired into hockey, he was the first to tell you he does not know much about hockey, but ended up netting three Stanley Cup championships here in Chicago with the Blackhawks. Between he was there for 13 years, and he and built that team together along with the Wirtz family and of course all the rest of the executives there. But before that, Bob, he was the guy that turned around the Chicago Cubs organization, which had gone from you spent some time in Chicago, you understand the legacy of WGN TV and of Chicago Cubs relationship right after the nadir of the relationship with Lee Elia losing his mind about the fans in those empty ballparks of the late 70s, early 80s, very depressing moment for Cubs fans. John McDonough figured out how to mend that relationship, and it has been enduring.
Well, yeah, the Dallas Green era came in. Jim Frey, who recently passed away, had a successful run as the Cubs manager. They came very, very close, as everybody knows, to getting to the World Series. Mm-hmm. In 1984, Ryne Sandberg emerged as the MVP. WGN and WTBS out of Atlanta then were the first of the real superstations making far-flung fans for the Cubs and the Braves outside of their own regions or their own cities. So that had a different buzz to it. You had to be around then to understand how fresh and new it was. And also in the late 70s, even though people speak romantically about the Ivy and the Cubbies and the romance of Wrigley Field, a lot of empty seats. But you hit 1984 and after that, the Cubs became a thing. And through good times and bad ever since, essentially, they played, if not to capacity, then close to capacity overall during the course of a season. And their fortunes, while they may fluctuate a little bit in the standings, their fortunes as a franchise have been very strong ever since.
And you mentioned Dallas Green, but I think another piece of that puzzle was Harry Carey coming into the broadcast.
Oh, absolutely. Coming from the south side to the north. And although Harry actually was at his best as a broadcaster, Chicago fans may not want to hear this, but when he was the radio voice of the Cardinals and teamed in the same booth with Jack Buck, then he was just as big and impressive a personality as people remember him from his days with Chicago, but his broadcasting craftsmanship was at a higher level. As he got older, and then especially after the strokes and other health difficulties, then it was all kind of personality, and that was more than good enough because he was such an unforgettable and unique personality. But in the 50s, 60s, early 70s in St. Louis, he had all that personality, all that command, along with excellent broadcasting craftsmanship. In the 80s, he became known nationally. He became not just a Cub fixture, but he became a national figure because of the superstation.
And you know, you talk about Jack Buck and that sound of what those two sounded like. Because as a kid, you know, I grew up in a radio geek family, and my dad would want to listen to KMOX because you could get it up here at night, and especially if there was because the Cubs played during the day. So if you wanted night baseball, you had to turn on the radio and listen to KMOX. And boy, that the sound of those two together was really something. Because Jack Buck is another one of those, you know, whether Ernie Harwell, Jack Buck, Harry Carey, those great voice, Vince Scully, right? Who those guys that sound, that late night AM sound of distant baseball, it's just something so romantic and so special, I think, in people's minds.
Yeah, you have to be of a certain age to really understand it. Now almost every game, if you're an avid fan, almost every game is on TV or streaming somewhere. The highlights are abundant. But baseball on the radio not only was a different thing for announcers, especially the great ones who could weave that spell, but it had a certain romance to it because you had to engage your imagination, that theater of the mind thing. And when you could pull in those 50,000-watt stations, so many baseball teams were on powerful 50,000-watt stations like KMOX, besides your hometown team, you could fiddle with that dial and pick up distant broadcasts. And it almost felt, if you were on Long Island like me growing up, Yankee fan, if you heard the Cleveland Indians or the Cincinnati Reds or Ernie Harwell on the Tigers or Jack and Harry on the Cardinals, you almost felt like you were eavesdropping on something because it wasn't your team. And then fast forwarding to the 80s, again, you'd have to be of a certain age to understand what it was like. Let's say you're in Tacoma, Washington, and the only baseball game you're getting at that point is the Seattle Mariners, maybe, early Seattle Mariners, and whatever the game of the week is on NBC on Saturday afternoons. But now all of a sudden, here it is, Tuesday, and you're supposed to be working in the office, but the Cubs are playing the Cardinals in the afternoon at Wrigley Field.
Right.
But it's 11 o'clock in the morning. It's 11 o'clock in the morning in Seattle. It's almost disorienting, but it was like Christmas every day.
That is really true. It really, really is true. So, and you know, just to bring it back to John McDonough for a moment here, I mean, he really understood that, and he got the power of the superstation. He also understood the power of making friends. He would always say famously, he always does still say famously, you know, he's in the friend-making business. That's what these sports teams should be. And you want to build fans, and he did that. Again, not really even understanding hockey when he got into it, but understood the relationship between a team and legacy sports. And hockey is very much like baseball in the sense, you know, it's passed on generationally. All sports really are in some way, shape, or form. But there's a certain connection that's very similar between baseball and, you know, your dad taking you out of Little League or whatever it happens to be, or you know, throwing the ball with you. Hockey's got the same kind of relationship in terms of their families. I want to ask you, though, before we let you go, because initially, Bob Costas, we were going to talk about the Jordan. Everybody's just calling it the Jordan Show in Chicago on Sundays on ESPN. And, you pop up a few times on camera yourself. And like I said, you're in every documentary from things about the Civil War all the way through, you know, Dennis Rodman last night. You were part of that.
I was not in Ken Burns baseball.
It seems to be.
I was not. Neither was I at Appomattox. just for the record, I was not. I was not in Ford's Theater. I was not at Appomattox.
I just seem to recall.
I was not at Gettysburg either.
My mind's eye, Bob, puts you at all of those places.
Yeah,
but here's the thing about that. I mean, you for Chicago sports fans and Bulls fans at that era, you were such an important figure because you know you were helming the NBC and the NBA and NBC coverage at that point, and it just was. I don't know that we'll have another kind of character-driven franchise like the Bulls were in that era.
Well, they were a true drama. Obviously, you have a great leading man in Michael Jordan, but you have a supporting cast, and it's a vivid cast of unique characters, of Pippen and Rodman, and even people like Paxson and Kerr, your sharpshooters, and Jerry Krause, and Jerry Reinsdorf. It's a rich, rich story with all kinds of drama attached to it, because even though they were never pushed to a seventh game in a final, they were in earlier rounds of the playoffs a couple of times, including the last year in 98 when the Pacers pushed them to a game seven in the Eastern Conference Finals and led by a substantial margin early in that game in Chicago. But even though they never were pushed to a seventh game in the finals, there were dramatic endings. Paxson's three in 93, the shot by Steve Carr to beat the Jazz in 97, and of course Jordan's shot in 98. So, you know, it's a rich story to begin with all kinds of highlights and high points, controversies mixed in, and the whole country. It wasn't just Chicago. It's especially intense in Chicago, of course, but the whole country was transfixed by it. I've said this so many times that people probably have heard it, and I apologize, but little old ladies in Omaha who wouldn't know the difference between a free throw and a three-pointer would say, I'm going to watch Michael Jordan. Don't bother me. I'm watching Michael Jordan. Maybe they said Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls.
Maybe.
You know? Yeah.
Not necessarily, but yeah, maybe they would have.
Right.
All right, Bob. I took a lot of your time here. Appreciated it as always. We'll talk to you soon. Bob Costas.
All right, man. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.